Hello and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today I am joined by a very special guest. This man runs the Hemp Embassy in Nimbin. He's a key leader in trying to get cannabis legalized in this country. It's Michael Balderson. How are you doing today, Michael?
Yeah, good, Goff. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, my man. Absolutely. Now, how did you get involved in politics?
Oh, that's a big question. It was pretty reluctantly, I can tell you. So, I didn't discover weed till I was in my 20s and kind of dropped out and went on a journey trying to work out, find some meaning in life, and it had a huge impact on me. So, more than 10 years later, I end up in Nimbin with a young family. And at the time, a lot of people came to Nimbin to buy bush weed. And mostly it was being sold by heroin addicts who took the risk, et cetera, you know. So they educated me on prohibition as much as anyone. I'd been living in India, hiding away, didn't know what to do really, ended up back here in Australia. And it was the street dealers who educated me on prohibition really. Then I started reading a bit, and once the penny dropped and I realised just how big the war on drugs is about and what it's really about, I think, you know, we got active in protesting on forming the Hemp Embassy, and then a group from Adelaide formed the Hemp Party, and I got involved there. That's, you know, nearly 30 years ago now, and it's kind of was a natural progression. And that led to, you know, finally we got registered and then ran in a few elections, and probably glad no one's got, I've never been elected. But it was kind of, you know, the politicians are who we have to reach at some point, and I find them too busy and living a pretty comfy life in big plush carpets, and they don't really know much what's going on at a street level. So it's been a mission to try to educate some politicians and get involved. And I'd have to say the disappointing thing is they come and go. You know, once you get someone educated a bit, they're just as likely to leave politics or lose the next election. So it's a never-ending process. But fortunately, that last election, we got a bit of, you know, got noticed a bit. For the first time, our vote doubled, which was, it was good.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so tell us about the Hemp Embassy. When did it start? What's it about?
About 30 years ago, we had our first Mardi Gras, which was, we'd have a really bad helicopter raid. The helicopters raid the hippie communes and people around here twice a year, and they have for ages. It's kind of military training for them, I reckon. But we had a shocking raid one year, and, you know, people get really upset. A helicopter low over your house, it's a freak out. You know, animals go off, children are screaming. So a fellow called Bob Hopkins organised a march, and we did a march. It was a May the 1st. It was a Sunday, I think, from memory. And like 700 people turned up. We'd made a few posters, and we had such a good day, marched up the street, smoked joints outside the cop shop. They all hid. And we had a great day, and we vowed, righto, every first weekend in May we're going to do this protest. And then a year or two later, we formed the Hemp Embassy. And I had a museum, a hippie museum, since burnt down. But we made a room in there devoted to cannabis and cannabis law reform, and formed this Hemp Embassy. You know, it was Bob's idea to call it an embassy. And then eventually we rented a building, and we've now got a big building in town next door to the pub. And we sell pretty much anything related to hemp, and it's trying to educate people. Trying to, you know, show people what an awesome plant it is and educate them on the history of prohibition. So that's the mission. And, you know, the embassy's good. It's become a tourist attraction and kind of sponsors Mardi Gras every year, and basically run by volunteers. And, you know, it's good. It's good.
That's good. Very good indeed. Now, I know the answer to this next question is very wide-ranging, so just more generally speaking, why should cannabis be legalised?
Why was it ever made illegal? Being my better question. So it's possibly the best and most useful plant on the planet, I would say. It's also possibly the safest and most useful medicine on the planet. in the recorded 10,000 years of recorded use, no one has ever died from cannabis use, which is quite a claim. Seems to be true. I mean, you can't really, you can get frightened and you can go to sleep, but no one's dying. So I think the whole war on drugs is pretty much a war over who's going to get the profits from pain relief, which is, when you think about it, perhaps the best business on the planet. If I can take your pain away and make you feel good, you know, you're going to give me your house at some point. So, you know, I think we've been told a lot of lies because of that, because people wanted, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, basically coming out of the petrochemical era, wanted to control pain relief. So that is a lot of what was behind making it illegal in the beginning. And I think we've had to undo the lies and undo the propaganda and reefer madness that has pretty much convinced the whole planet that cannabis is a dangerous drug, your children might go crazy. And it's not just cannabis, you know, it's all nature's best pain-relieving plants. The opium poppy and the coca plant are obviously two big ones. So just look at the black market that's grown in heroin, cocaine and cannabis, into the biggest business turnover on the planet, along with armaments, and they're very mixed up. So it's an incredibly safe, good medicine, and it's an incredibly useful plant for the environment, and that it's got this unique, long, strong, flexible fiber. You know, I often tell people the word canvas came from cannabis. Back in the day, it was the strongest fiber that made the clothing, the rope, the sails. You know, it's been incredibly useful since synthetics were created. That's been the competition to it. But we all know how good natural fibers are. And not just the fibers, but the seed is also a superfood, highly nutritious, full of the omegas, better than fish oil in many ways, I think, which is, you know, ripping out of the ocean. So the plant has so many good uses, and really, it wasn't banned because of the seeds or the fiber. It was banned because of its mind-altering, you know, facilities and the medicine. So a lot of good things got thrown out with it when it was made illegal. So there's lots of arguments for making it legal, but perhaps the big argument is the damage that the drug war is doing, the social damage. Our jails are full. The social inequality it's caused by people who want to use it as medicine. It's expensive. You've got to, you know, if you can't grow your own, it costs you an arm and a leg. I think, you know, there's endless reasons why we should end prohibition and welcome the plant back into our lives. You know, there are claims that 150 years ago it was the most grown plant on the planet. I think when cotton came along, it probably took over a bit because it was easier to process, but you know, cannabis has been part of mankind for as long as we know. And in fact, we've got this endocannabinoid system throughout our body, like we've almost grown up with the plant. So I'm no great scientist, but I've watched the incredible destruction the war on drugs has done to people socially, you know, consciously, mentally. It's a big thing. Sometimes I think it... you know, people like me discover cannabis and realize what a fantastic help it was to our mental state, if you like, that you can't not get angry about the drug laws once you start working it out. And I think, you know, finally people are changing. Thank God for the changes in North America, because that's having a big influence. Ironically, they started the war.
Yes, it's very true. Now, I always think when I'm negotiating with somebody, it's in my best interest to appeal to what they want, because that's how you get things done. So when I think about governments and politicians, what they want is taxes and money. So if marijuana was to be legalized, there would be a huge tax windfall and revenue windfall. Can you talk to us a little bit about what they would get out of it, taxation and monetary wise?
Well, Colorado hasn't had legal cannabis for 10 years. They've already made $1 billion in tax, and they've focused on education and hospitals with their money. So $1 billion. Colorado's about the size of Sydney, 5 million people. It's not many people. So there's massive room for the government to get something out of it tax-wise, but also the savings, the social destruction savings, the costs of jails, the costs of courts, the costs of looking after everybody with health. I mean, I actually think if cannabis was widely and freely available, the health savings would be massive. So there's not only the tax you make, there's the savings you make, which prohibition is costing now a fortune to maintain and enforce. I mean, in Australia, 50% of police work and arrests is drug-related, possibly more, I reckon, because, you know, thieving is drug-related, lots of crime is drug-related. You know, the gang violence we've seen in Sydney this year, murdering each other, it's all drug war related. So I reckon the social costs are as big as the tax savings.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you've spoken about it a little bit before. Now, again, the answer to this question is very wide-ranging, but can you tell us a little bit about the medical benefits? So for certain conditions that cannabis has been proven to assist, like seizures and whatnot.
Yeah, and certainly assists, but also doesn't have the side effects that pharmaceuticals have. So, you know, it's interesting though. So there's about 250,000 legal prescriptions being given out in Australia now for legal cannabis. And the most common reasons people are using it is chronic pain and anxiety. And as far as pain relief goes, a lot of people come to Nimbin looking to change from opiates. Sure, they can get pain relief with their opiates, but they also get constipated, they feel sleepy. There's quite a lot of side effects, whereas cannabis doesn't have them. In fact, I like the side effects. So, you know, that's a big issue. And also, you know, the biggest problems in our society nowadays, wide-ranging, seem to be anxiety and depression, which I'm not surprised by. Cannabis is great for both of them, I think. And I think, you know, the evidence is in what's happening now. With all the legal doctors in Australia doling out very strong cannabis, mostly grown in Canada, you know, THC content you cannot buy on the street. We're not seeing any, you know, psychosis or the dramas we've been told will happen if you use strong cannabis. So the proof is in the pudding, really. And I think, you know, the number of people now, it's climbing quickly, the number of people getting legal medical cannabis. And I'd say that's a good indicator of just how popular it is. But a lot of people are changing from pharmaceuticals. For epilepsy, it's fantastic. The thing that changed Australia was epileptic children. You know, the AMA, the Medical Association, the doctors have been bagging cannabis forever. Really, they're working for the pharmaceutical industry, and they don't have the evidence. They haven't done the trials that everyone's done for pills. But I think epilepsy was the one that sort of broke the back of it. No one could argue at the movies of epileptic children having terrible seizures, and when they had cannabis, they stopped. You know, children who with Dravet syndrome, epilepsy, having 100 seizures a day or more, suddenly having none, was a very convincing argument. So that was the beginning of it. But now lots of adults with epilepsy, lots of people with autism, Parkinson's, all those areas, cannabis can be fantastic for all of that. But, you know, I think as a health tonic also, it has its place, which is I'm talking about largely using CBD, not THC so much, the lesser cannabinoid, which is sort of anti-psychosis, anti-anxiety, has a calming effect, and possibly getting that good state of mind is as important for your health as anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, there are many myths. I mean, you've touched on a few of them already, but there are many myths around marijuana and cannabis and, well, same thing, and all that sort of stuff. Can you dispel some of the more common myths around cannabis for us?
Well, one of the myths that, you know, was big in Australia was it can, you know, your children will go crazy if they smoke cannabis. And I think that came from people being admitted to mental health, to hospitals, we would call them nut houses in Australia, with mental health conditions, and they blood test everyone. And because cannabis is fat soluble, it stays in your blood. You know, I would have cannabis in my blood for a couple of months because I'm a daily user, whereas all the other drugs are out of your system in a day or two. So the figures have got very distorted with cannabis and, you know, how dangerous it is and what it's causing. I've seen hospital reports where they attribute 10% of beds to cannabis because everyone being admitted who got their blood tested came up with cannabis. So they presumed that was a problem. But in fact, they might have smoked a joint days ago. So I can't even remember what you asked me first, but it's a big issue, the fat-soluble part of cannabis. And the authorities don't seem to have realised that's like in Australia, we have this driving. You're not allowed to drive with even a skerrick of THC in your blood. They haven't worked out that that might have come from a month ago, certainly a week ago.
So excuse me. That's okay. So if and when it gets legalized, would you like to see it handled like alcohol, for example, where you can only buy it and use it in certain areas? Or how would you like to see the legalization? What would be the end goal for you, so to speak?
Well, it's interesting in America that a lot of the cannabis monitoring is done by an alcohol board, the Alcohol and Cannabis Board, I think in Washington State and Oregon, or one of them, for example. Look, I think, you know, we can't do the immediate transition back into it being freely available because, you know, people have got too spooked by it all. I think we've got lots of examples in America and Canada that we could look at. Like every American state who's got legal cannabis now has a different setup. I reckon we should pick the eyes out of them. I would have dispensaries where most people probably will not grow their own, like they don't brew their own alcohol and they all could. I would have dispensaries. You would probably obviously have to serve it for over 18-year-olds, although in Australia a lot of people start younger than that smoking cannabis. You could bring in a lot of health education, for example. It's a big mistake starting off smoking with tobacco, which is a habit in Australia. I think it's a bad habit that people are much better off smoking straight like they do in America or Canada or New Zealand. It's a kind of Aussie-European habit. We might have picked up smoking hash, I reckon. So, you know, education is a critical part of introducing proper regulations, I reckon. So I would let people grow their own. I would actually, rather than let big corporations take over the market, which is kind of what's happening, I would probably ideally license people to say, you know, grow 100 or 200 plants and supply a certain amount. And it'd be like boutique breweries. They could specialize, you know. A certain strain is better for arthritis. Another strain is better for chronic pain. So people could specialize in that field and it would create a lot of employment, hemployment, we call it. So I would rather see that than the big cannabis corporate models which are developing in Australia where you've really got to have millions of dollars to grow legal, you know, high THC pot. Whereas once we've got past that terror of the plant being a dangerous creature, you know, people could grow, you know, 100 or 200 plants, have small plots, earn a living out of it. I mean, there are literally tens of thousands of Australians who grow their own cannabis and over the last 40 or 50 years have learned great skills and talents. So we're talking about throwing all that away and just hiring big corporations. Often the people there don't even know, have had no experience growing cannabis. So I'd let people grow their own and I'd let dispensaries, educational outlets come up where you can buy it, like a bottle shop. And there'd have to be, you know, there'd have to be age restrictions and quality control. Quality control is important, I think. So once it's legal, no one's buying mouldy weed or interfered with weed or chemical-ridden weed. Ideally, it'd be organic anyway. So just sensible regulations. Probably the alcohol industry would be good to model on.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's what I thought. And what about edibles? Are you a fan of edibles? And would you be a fan of, if legalized, you would have the dispensaries also selling edibles? Like, you know, obviously there's the stereotype of brownies, but of course you can have edibles in pretty much anything. So would that be something you would be supportive of as well?
Yeah, I would be supportive of it. But you're right, it's a bit of a trickier area. because I smoke because of the self-tritation. You know, the smoke goes into your lungs, straight into your bloodstream, so I can feel the effect quickly and know, oh, well, I only need a couple of tokes, or if the weed wasn't that strong, I might have five or six tokes. So you kind of can measure your dose, whereas if you eat it, it's not going to come into effect for an hour or two, and by then you might have had too little or too much. But having said that, if you're a, you know, a regular user or a medical user, once you've worked out your dose, eating it, I think, is much healthier. You know, obviously you're not putting any smoke in your lungs. So long-term, and for long-term users, I think eating it or capsules or tinctures is probably even healthier. But again, it needs education. So edibles absolutely have to be in there. I've seen in America there was a bit of problem introducing that, and it can be really strong easily, and you've got to keep it away from children, et cetera, et cetera. But eventually that we worked out. I mean, alcohol has to be kept away from children too, and it's a similar situation. I think you're right, you know, referencing it to the alcohol industry, we can learn a lot from how they've managed to regulate that, because, I mean, back in the day of Prohibition, I remember reading once, you know, every third house had a backyard still making their own alcohol, and the kids were getting hold of it a lot, and quite a lot of young children died. So we don't want that happening. And, yeah, I think that we will basically work it out, and edibles are a critical part of it, and they're healthier than smoking. Doctors are never going to recommend smoking anyway, are they?
No, that's very true. See, I'm an asthmatic, so if I have my choice, I go edibles 100 times out of 100 because of my asthma, because obviously smoking doesn't agree with asthma. Now, the final question, which is kind of the obvious question, is what further steps do you need to take to get it legalized? Like, where are you at, and where do you what do you need to do to get it over the line?
We need someone to give Albo a cookie. No, not really. Not really. But it is about education. And we have been lied to. We've been hoodwinked, you know. This is a terrible, dangerous plant, blah, blah, blah. Where, in fact, it's a fantastic, safe medicine once people know how to use it. And, you know, it doesn't take that much to learn it either. So the process of education, I mean, we do a radio show here every couple of weeks on the local community radio. And I remember 20 years ago, you'd be lucky to find half a dozen stories that had cannabis in it. Now, there are hundreds of stories every week. So the change, particularly in America, I think, and you remember California got legal medical weed in 1996, so it was 25 years ago now. So it's been out there a long time, and a lot of the myths have been dispelled. So it does get back to education, though, and there's a lot of vested interests making sure the water is muddy, particularly the pharmaceutical industries, but I also think the police. In Australia, you know, as I said, half the police's work is created by the drug war, and there's better things for them to do, but they're hanging on to their jobs and their power as best they can, because it's enormous power. You know, you can come to Nimbin, our village, a hot drug zone or whatever they call it. You know, they can feel free to search anyone or any car anytime, which is pretty intimidating for a lot of people and created a lot of disrespect for the police, I reckon. So they have a lot to gain by ending the drug war, the cops, I reckon. They'll get a lot more respect back. They'll get the community talking to them a lot more, being more honest with them. So, it's a slow process, but in a word, it's about education. And the politicians are a long way away from the street, and it's an underground world, the cannabis world, and Australia has a massive amount of smokers. You know, we've always loved weed, but it's very hidden, and unless you know someone, it's buried, and politicians are quite aloof from the everyday world. So it's been hard convincing them when they've got the pharmaceutical industries taking them out to lunch and lobbying them full on, and then the police would jump any suggestion of change. The police jump on it very quickly, I find. And then there's probably the hotel industry, a bit thinking they'll lose money. And I'd say religious-wise, there's some churches that are pretty anti-cannabis, believing the propaganda, whereas for me, you know, It was called God's Gift back in Jesus' day, but they don't seem to know that.
Fair enough.
I think we're in a slow process of re-educating everyone on what the truth is about this plant because they've been lied to.
Fair enough. What a good note to end on. So, Michael, if people want to learn more about the Hemp Embassy and support the cause and what you do, where can they go? What can they do?
We've got a website, hempembassy.net. We have Mardi Gras every year. There's a website for that too, nimbinmardigras.com. They can visit Nimbin. It's a bit of a cannabis university in itself, I think. And I think, you know, Steve Jobs, isn't it, who started Apple up, smoked a joint every day of his life. So the whole computer world, I think, you know, it's very creative cannabis. So you know, fires up a psychiatrist friend of mine calls it manure for the imagination. And it is very creative. And that whole computer world that's been created the last 30, 40, 50 years and changed everything, hasn't it? Having the internet has changed everything for everybody, really, and a big part of the change the planet's going through. You just have to Google it. Any question on cannabis you've got, you just have to Google it and you'll be flooded with answers. I mean, I say to a lot of people, put the word cannabis in and your ailment, whatever your pain is, be it Parkinson's, be it chronic pain, be it a broken back. If you put that into the Google, any search engine with the word cannabis, you're going to get so much information. But equally as important is to learn about prohibition, I reckon, how it was created, how it started, because it's, you know, it's less than 100 years ago and it's sort of, well, you know, some of the stories of how it started was the Mexicans and the Negroes were smoking it and the white girls was dancing with them and having a good time, and it freaked out the religious zealots. So really there was a lot of it was business, big business really made cannabis illegal, but they used a lot of clever propaganda and movies, the Reefer Madness movie, saying, you know, because it does relax people. It does help them to think for themselves. It is insightful. And in a way, that is threatening to the whole status quo. And they've created a lot of stigma around it. So all that has to change, but is slowly changing. Yeah, I think if you're any good on a computer, you can find out everything you want to know about cannabis nowadays. And there's a lot of good books out there.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Michael. I really do appreciate you coming on the podcast and having a chat.
Total pleasure. The other thing they could do in Australia is join Legalised Cannabis on the website legalisedcannabis.org.au. It's free to join. You can join the federal party and any state party, and we would really welcome that. We're trying to keep the pressure on in elections.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, absolutely do as Michael has instructed. And that brings us to the end of this week's episode of the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast. Leave a friendly comment, rate and review. 5 stars is always good. And, of course, beernutsproductions.com is your one-stop shop for all your entertainment needs. So until next time, we will talk to you then.